stood well on the claim, but it had long grown warm in this weather. Nonetheless, I served it with all the grace and courtesy drilled into us in all of the glittering court's good hostess lessons. I even earned a gruff thanks from one of Elias's otherwise silent men. A brief exchange of glances with Cedric told him all he needed to know. It was unlikely that Elias would search the shanty, but nothing obvious would point to the Alanzans. "You should have never had that diamond out," I told Cedric once our visitors had left. "This is as bad as the open rituals." He pushed sweaty hair out of his face and nodded. "You're right."
"Did you just agree with me?"
"I agree with you all the time. You're an astute and intelligent woman, smarter than me." We both looked up at the stony outcropping. "When are you going up?" I asked. He leaned down and began sifting through the lines and other gear Elias had brought. "No time like the present."
"What now? It's the hottest part of the day."
"It's always hot these days." He separated out a couple of ropes and some hooks. "I can't wait to get one of those big storms old Sully's always talking about." I tried to think of some other excuse to delay his climbing up, but there was none. And again, there was always the pressure of time and money weighing upon us.
"Do you even know how to use any of this?" I asked.
He fastened a leather harness around him.
"You doubt me?"
"I've just seen you ride a horse, that's all."
"No need to worry.
I've researched it. Talked a lot to Sully and the suppliers in town. It's pretty straightforward." I was skeptical, but I couldn't deny that he seemed pretty competent as he hooked up the various lines and stakes. I handed him a pick and kissed him on the cheek. "Be careful. Don't leave me a widow before we're married." He grinned by way of answer and began his climb. I knew little of such matters and was impressed with the way he could pierce the rock with stakes and hooks, creating handholds to scale up. The jagged surface I'd worried so much about actually helped along the way, as it provided extra traction.
"You might be good at this after all," I called up.
"I told you, no need to worry."
A few clouds had moved in. I was still sweating in the humidity, but at least it cooled me as I waited. The climb didn't take that long, really, but I watched it with clenched fists, aware of every second until he finally swung himself up onto the wide ledge at the top. He waved down at me, and I exhaled in relief. He unhooked his pick from the harness and stepped inside the crevasse. Losing sight of him made me tense again, especially since I didn't know how long this part would take. I doubted he'd simply walk into a wall of gold, and how deep did that opening go? Was he entering some cavern that would put him in danger of a rock slide? A half hour passed before he finally emerged.
"Well?"
I yelled.
"Catch!"
was all he answered back. He tossed something down. The throw was wide and it landed several feet behind me. I scurried back, searching the ground. A flash in the sunlight caught my eye, and disbelieving, I picked up a gold nugget the size of a cherry. 5 times the size of Glen's pebble. More gold than from a day of us panning together. I ran back to the cliff's base.
"Are there piles of this laying around?"
He put his hand around his mouth so I could better hear.
"No, but it didn't take that much digging to get it out. I think there's a huge deposit running through this. To do it right, they'll want more men and some engineers, I'm sure. But there's more than enough here to pay out your contract."
"And will that more part also cover your Westhaven stake?"
"Definitely."
"Then get down here so I can kiss you."
My heart drummed with excitement. Without even using a backup team, we could almost certainly get out what we needed in a relatively short term. If the vein was fully excavated properly, Cedric would have rights to everything pulled out, less Warren's ownership fee. It would not only get us to Westhaven, but ensure we didn't have to move into another shanty. Maybe I could live on love, but that didn't mean I didn't want to also live with a solid roof over my head. Cedric's climb down required some different maneuvers. In theory, it was simpler. He secured a rope in the stone and then swung himself down, gripping the rope with gloved hands as he rappelled over the stony face. It was less work than getting up, but I was constantly aware that a lot depended on his grip. The harness was secured to the rope as well, providing extra security. And despite his outward cockiness, I could see that he was moving very cautiously. Which was why it was so astonishing when he slipped, suddenly sliding down with neither hands nor harness holding the rope. I screamed, as a brief, terrifying vision flashed through my mind of him crashing to the ground. His hands flailed out, trying to get purchase, and then somehow, amazingly, he managed to stop himself on a piece of rock jutting out about two-thirds of the way down. It was a narrow horizontal ledge that was just barely big enough for his feet to fit if he turned them outward in opposite directions. The rest of his body clung to the cliff's face, spread eagle.
"Are you okay?" I cried.
"Take Lizzie and get Sully," he called back. "You can probably be back in an hour."
"Are you crazy? I'm not leaving you up there for an hour."
His hold looked tenuous as it was. I didn't even know if he'd last 5 minutes.
"Adelaide, be quiet. I'm smarter than you, remember?"
My tone was harsh, but it was only to cover my own fear. Cedric had fallen far from the rope he'd been on. It was too high up now. He'd placed another lower rope just before his fall, but he could no longer reach it. I had a few extra pieces of equipment at my feet, most of which didn't seem to be of use, with a few exceptions. That last rope he'd placed was just barely too high for me to reach. Picking up two sharp metal stakes, I practiced plunging them into the rock. To my surprise, I had the strength to embed them and get a secure hold. What was more problematic was pulling myself up. The muscles in my upper body just didn't have the capability to do it with ease. So I did it with difficulty. I told myself over and over that I only had to go up a few feet. I told myself it was no problem. Most important, I told myself that Cedric's life depended on it.
"Don't do anything dangerous," Cedric said.
"You can't even see me," I yelled back.
"Yeah, but I know you."
With every muscle in my body screaming, I managed to use the stakes to claw my way up enough to reach the rope. I gripped it and was surprised to find it harder to hold on to than the stakes. My hands immediately began to slide, and I yelped in pain as the rope tore at my skin. Using every bit of determination I could muster, I managed to stop my descent and hold on to the rope, bending my body at an angle so that my feet stabilized me on the rock. I contemplated my next move as a light wind blew strands of hair into my face. I needed to get the rope over to Cedric. If he could reach it, he could climb down safely. Lifting my feet, I hopped to the side, attempting to swing over on the rope. I moved only a little and soon realized the problem. This low on the rope, my weight wasn't enough to move the line a significant distance. I needed to climb up. Again, all my muscles were pushed to their limits as I raised one hand over the other. I'd seen laborers in Oslo climb ropes my entire life. I'd had no idea how much work it was. Having skinned-up hands didn't help either. When I thought I was high enough to swing myself and the rope over more effectively, I told Cedric,
"The rope's coming in on your right. Grab it when you can."
I then launched off again to the side, and as hoped, I moved the rope significantly closer to Cedric, but still not enough. Another ungainly swing got me within grasping distance.
"I can see it," he said. "I think I can do it."
Peering up, I held my breath as I watched him scoot over on that tiny ledge. A few rocks skittered down as he did, and I hoped it would hold him. His hand stretched out and grasped hold of the rope, but now he needed to get the rest of him over. With what sounded like a muttered prayer, he jumped off the ledge, reaching wildly for the rope with his other hand. Once more I had that terrible image of him falling, but he managed to make contact and grip both hands on the line. The sudden change in weight on the rope made me lose my foothold, and we both swung wildly for several moments. I slid again, doing more damage to my hands, but managed to keep my grip and finally plant my feet on the rock again. Above me, I felt Cedric do the same. Before we could take any comfort in that momentary security, I felt the entire rope shift, jerking me down. I realized what was happening before Cedric spoke.
"The hook on this line wasn't planted deeply enough to hold us both."
In an instant, I knew what I needed to do. I had to get off the rope. I began shimmying down it, which was slightly easier than going up, but still required great care. When I reached the bottom of the rope, I felt the whole thing shift again, but it continued to hold. I couldn't reach the spikes I'd used to climb up to the rope. The distance from where I was to the ground wouldn't kill me, but it would probably hurt. Cedric falling from his height would be much worse. Without hesitation, I let go of the rope and jumped to the ground. I'd feared I'd break my leg or ankle, but I managed to land in a way so that my hip struck the ground first. It was a jolting, teeth-rattling landing, but at worst I thought I'd have only a bad bruise on that hip tomorrow. Freed of my weight, the rope held as Cedric quickly scrambled down. He made the same jump I had, and his greater height gave him less distance to cover.
"Are you okay?" he asked,
helping me to stand.
"I think so." But as I spoke, I looked at my hands and winced at what I saw. Broken skin and blood. I'd ignored them in my frantic attempt to come down, but now the pain hit me full force.
Cedric held my hands gently. I could see small cuts and scrapes on him as well.
"Oh, Adelaide, you shouldn't have done that."
"And leave you up there? No way.
What happened? You seem to be doing so well."
"I thought so too," he said, leading me away. The clouds were increasing and growing darker, which seemed fitting given the turn the day had made. When we reached the shanty, he helped me wash and wrap my hands in clean cloths. "Mistress Marshall will have some kind of salve for you. I'll take you back now." He began unbuckling the harness and started to toss it aside.
"Wait, let me look,"
I said, reaching for it. Cedric might be an amateur at a lot of these frontier tasks, but I knew he hadn't been careless with the harness or disregarded the directions he'd been given. This mishap wasn't his doing. I turned the harness over and examined each part, with a feeling of dread in my stomach that intensified when I found what I'd feared. I pointed to a small metal loop.
"Look."
It was one of two that the rope had fed through, wrapping around so that it kept him secured while still letting him move. The loops were made of a single strand that had been bent so the ends met to close the circle. One loop's ends were brought together tightly, leaving no space between them. But the one I indicated had bent ends that appeared to have been strained to a point where they pulled apart and released the rope. Cedric leaned forward.
"It looks like the ends were never attached properly. Or they were pried apart."
We both sat there quietly as those words hung between us.
"Maybe it was an accident," I said at last.
"But if it wasn't, why?"
"It's in their best interest to know what's in there.
Warren's fortune is at stake, too."
"He's out of town," Cedric reminded me. "Maybe this was all Elias's doing. He's a petty man. I can see him being vindictive, and he's never liked us."
"But this is all speculation," I said. "Maybe it was an accident."
"Right. Maybe it was an accident."
But I knew neither of us believed that. "Trust each other," Ayana had said. "But no one else." I pulled out the gold nugget, which I'd tucked into a pocket before my climb. Its glitter was hypnotic.
"I don't think we should wait for Warren to get back to get this gold out."
"Agreed," said Cedric. "Tomorrow we're taking matters into our own hands." Chapter 26. We made our plans while riding back to the Marshall place that evening. About two-thirds of the way, we ran into Mr. Marshall coming toward us. By that point, the sky was a sickly greenish-grey, marked by occasional flashes of lightning jumping between the clouds. The wind rose and fell like someone's breath, as though the world were waiting for something big to happen.
"I was coming to fetch you if you weren't already on your way," Mr. Marshall said. "Come on, be quick. This one's going to be bad."
The rain had just begun when we reached the cabin. Mr. Marshall urged Cedric to stay the night and put Lizzie in the barn with the other restless animals.
"You don't know what these storms are like. I saw a couple when I first came to survey this place. They roll in off the ocean, big swirling beasts that grow and grow, with winds that can flatten houses. They're worse closer to the water, but we'll still catch some of it here inland before it breaks up."
I immediately thought of my friends back at Wisteria Hollow.
"Will it hit Cape Triumph? It's right on the water."
"Depends on what direction it's coming in from. Lots of times they're shielded from the coast. If it does hit, don't worry. They know what to do."
Cedric was reluctant to stay at first, but as the rain turned into a non-stop sheet of water and the wind wailed around us, he finally conceded.
"You wanted a storm," he told me as we ate dinner.
Everyone was tense as the storm grew in ferocity outside. Every so often the little cabin shuddered from a particularly strong blast of wind. I couldn't sleep when we went to bed. The little girls around me were scared, and I told them soothing things I didn't entirely believe, like that the storm was almost over, and the cabin would hold. They eventually drifted off, but I still couldn't manage it, and got out of bed. Downstairs I found I wasn't the only one awake. Cedric sat on the kitchen table's bench while Mr. Marshall paced restlessly around. He glanced over but didn't chastise me.
"Stay away from the windows," was all he said before resuming his vigil.
I sat down next to Cedric and laced my fingers with his.
"Your home won't survive this. You should have gotten that tarp."
"I don't think a tarp could have stopped this, but we'll be okay as long as the gold doesn't blow away."
I stared off as the storm raged and felt old memories consume me.
"It's just like the ship."
"No," he squeezed my hand. "You're safe here. Your friends are safe." I nodded, but it was hard not to shake that unease. I remembered that feeling of being knocked around at sea, my stomach rolling as the world turned on its side, and off on the dark water, the grey gull tossed to and fro. The storm eventually quieted, but I didn't trust it.
"The eye," Mr. Marshall confirmed. "We're halfway through."
Sure enough, the lull passed, and the storm renewed its fury. I grew tense again. Cedric sat on the floor, now covered in straw, and put his back to the log wall. He beckoned me down, and I sat between his outstretched legs, leaning back against his chest. Mr. Marshall glanced at us, but didn't seem particularly interested, even when Cedric wrapped his arms around my waist. Cedric smoothed my hair back.
"Get some rest. We've got a big day tomorrow."
A particularly powerful blast of wind slammed into the cabin, making the walls shake. I flinched, and Cedric readjusted his hold on me.
"The ship," I said. "I just can't stop thinking about it. And you know what else? I can't stop thinking about Tamsin, thinking about the ship. I know that sounds weird, but if they're getting some of this back in Cape Triumph, she must be so scared."
"She's in a house better built than this one. And she's with Mira. Surely Mira can fight the forces of nature."
"Mira is a force of nature."
Somehow amazingly, the raging wind and rain faded to background noise over time. I stopped jumping at every loud sound and dozed against Cedric. I woke to him gently helping me to stand.
"The worst is over. It's getting quieter. Let's get to real beds."
Stifling a yawn of his own, he guided me upstairs to the girls' room. I climbed into bed with them and fell asleep before Cedric even shut the door. When morning came, the blue sky and bright sunlight would have made anyone believe the storm had been a dream. Closer scrutiny proved otherwise. Trees and limbs had fallen all over the property, but none had hit the buildings. Mr. Marshall's diligent work on the cabin had paid off, though the barn roof had sustained some damage, as had the fence surrounding his fields. He and his family immediately set to work on repairs, and Cedric and I rode off to White Rock. There we found a wide array of storm damage. The more hastily thrown together businesses and homes hadn't fared well, though most of their owners had been able to seek shelter with neighbors whose structures were sturdier. Residents now worked side by side to rebuild, uniting in a way that stirred up that feeling within me about the promise this new frontier held. With everyone so busy, it was a difficult time to recruit workers for Cedric's claim. When we heard that Warren had fought through the storm and arrived late last night from Denham, we decided to change plans and appeal to him directly. We still didn't know if Elias had been responsible for the harness accident, but Warren had seemed legitimately interested in our success. The governor's home was a newly built estate, boasting luxuries like wallpaper and brass sconces. Elias's snide words rang in my head as a servant led us to a fine rug in the foyer.
"From a distance, I wouldn't even think you're a woman at all."
My practical attire was worn, my skin darkened from the sun. The only styling attempt I made anymore was half-heartedly tying my hair back. I felt particularly inadequate when I caught sight of Warren in his typically impeccable attire. He was walking out a man I didn't know, saying,
"I assure you, the rumors are just that. There are no Lorandians moving across the western colonies. No Ikori either. Times are becoming stable, and so people start creating phantoms."
When the visitor was gone, Warren turned his attention to us. A brief raised eyebrow was his only indication of surprise at our appearance.
"I'm so happy to see you again, Adelaide."
Then, belatedly to Cedric,
"And you too, of course."
"How was your journey?" I asked politely.
"Rough." Warren's face fell. "The storm blew up while we were crossing the bay last night. We lost a few people."
He studied me a few moments before going on.
"I would have stayed in Cape Triumph had I known the risks. But here we are. Elias tells me you two have some exciting news.
Like a conjured demon, Elias slinked into the room. Cedric held out the gold nugget. I found it after only a little digging.
Elias took the nugget but held it at arm's length, like it might be toxic.
Bigger than that last bit you came flashing around. And it seems authentic.
Of course it is, said Warren, snatching it away. Enthusiasm filled his features. And this could make both our fortunes. Have you told anyone?
I hesitated. No, but we were hoping to hire some men today now that this is confirmed. Of course, with the storm.
Don't, interrupted Warren. Don't tell anyone yet.
I understand the need for control of the situation, said Cedric, but I also need to get moving on this.
Don't speak to Mr. Doyle that way, snapped Elias.
Warren gave him a withering look.
He's right. We do need to move. But I'm not delaying because of any need for control. I'm delaying for your own safety.
How so? I asked.
As much as I want to believe Hadassin is a wonderful, righteous place, Warren shook his head, well, the lure of gold is irresistible to some. It makes them do terrible things. There are still raiders and bandits who'll swoop in on prosperous claims to scavenge what they can, and aren't afraid to hurt those who own them. Aside from having the proper workers and equipment, I'd like to make sure you have proper security before this project begins.
It was a hard argument to counter. We'd all heard stories of claim-raiding brigands, but I'd never expected we'd run into them. I'd never expected our claim would have the potential to be so rich.
That's very kind of you, Cedric said at last. Warren gave him a wry smile.
And don't worry. I will make sure this is done expediently. Don't worry about your timeline.
I hoped he was as sincere as he seemed.
Thank you.
Warren promised he'd have news for us soon. A servant came forward to show us out, but I lingered a moment with Warren, unable to hold back my curiosity.
How is your search for a bride coming?
I asked softly.
I expected you to be married by now.
I expected it too, he said with a chuckle. I'm considering a few possibilities, but... well, you're a tough act to follow.
I found it odd he'd be considering any possibilities, seeing as how certain things had seemed with Tamsin when I left.
I'm sorry, I said, needing to say something. No need to be. It's over and done.
He regarded me speculatively.
Have you heard any news from Cape Triumph?
From the other girls in your cohort?
I had a letter from Tamsin that she sent a while ago. Nothing from Mira yet.
Mira?
I'd seen him have several conversations with her, but the confusion on his face seemed legitimate.
My Sirminican friend? I prompted.
Ah, yes, her, of course. The one interested in books.
Now I was lost.
Books?
Whenever we hosted events at my parents' home, she was always asking about books. Mother isn't as... He paused to give me an apologetic look. She isn't as open-minded as we are, so she was more than happy to let your friend stay in the library as long as she liked.
Of course she was,
I said. Typical Viola, hiding away unsavory elements from her party. Cedric and I returned to White Rock Central District with mixed feelings.
More delays before we can get married. More sleepless nights, I teased.
Well, I think the sleepless nights will actually come after we're married, but yes, it's frustrating.
We came to a stop, and he stared off at the busy White Rock residence and the rebuilding.
And he's not wrong about bandits. Sully was telling me about some. It happens.
I really need to meet this Sully, Cedric smiled fondly.
He's a character, that's for Mr. Thorne.
We both turned around at the unfamiliar voice, but when I got a good look at the speaker, I realized he wasn't so unfamiliar after all. I immediately froze up, but Cedric recovered quickly.
Mr. Garrett, said Cedric, extending his hand in greeting. A pleasure to see you. I didn't know the McGraw Agency had business out here in the wilderness.
Silas Garrett, the Royal Investigative Agent, regarded us speculatively.
His Majesty has business in all the colonies, and I am but his humble servant.
You... He frowned, taking in my rough clothes and disheveled hair.
You were one of the girls at Wisteria Hollow?
I was getting tired of having the difference in my state constantly being reinforced.
Yes, I'm Adelaide Bailey.
I stated my assumed name firmly.
I didn't know what had happened with the search for my former self, but if he'd seen my portrait, I was pretty sure he would have identified me immediately. Surely I hadn't changed that much. I'm surprised to see you here. I thought you girls married up. Unless you found some successful prospector? Again, his tone told me he found that hard to believe, given my appearance. Things change, I said. And you never know. Anyone can make their fortune out here. But it's certainly a lot of hard work.
Hard, sweaty, dirty work, Cedric confirmed. Not like the glamorous life of a McGraw agent.
Silas guffawed.
Not that glamorous. Lots of hard, dirty work there, too.
Cedric wore the bright, dazzled look of someone in the throes of hero worship. Come on, don't ruin it for us. I don't suppose you can tell us anything about what you're working on. The case you mentioned that was so top secret.
Still top secret, said Silas. His tone was gruff, but I got the impression he liked the attention.
I picked up on Cedric's lead. What about your associate's case? That missing noblewoman. You can tell us about that, can't you?
Not much to tell, I'm afraid. That other agent got delayed up north, and I'm sure last night's storm hasn't helped things. But I expect he'll arrive soon. He may end up out here, for all I know. Rumor has it the lady in question might have fled to some of the outer settlements.
Again his eyes fell on me, and I laughed.
I have a hard time believing that, at least if she's anything like the noble women I worked around. I remember our household was in an uproar when my lady cracked a nail just before some fancy gala. Someone like her could never handle this.
I held out my hands and pulled off some of the wrappings. The bleeding had stopped overnight, but they still looked pretty terrible.
Silas actually flinched. My goodness, he said, looking away. That must hurt quite a bit.
That's life out here, Mr. Garrett. Cedric gave him a polite nod of farewell. And now we've got other things to attend to. Good luck with your case. We strolled away casually, but I groaned as soon as we were out of earshot. Why do I have the feeling that the latest rumor he heard came from Viola Doyle? Because, as previously established, you're a smart and intelligent woman, and Viola Doyle is a vindictive one. I came to a halt in front of some shops where men busily hammered away, making conversation difficult. If that picture gets shown in Cape Triumph, the other agent doesn't even have to come to Hattison himself. All it'll take is some enterprising bounty hunter trekking out here to claim his prize.
You need to get married.
A conversation we keep having over and over. He started to respond, but then his eyes fell on something across the dusty road. Or, more specifically, someone.
I know that man, Cedric murmured.
His brow furrowed, and then smoothed out.
It can't be. I need to go talk to him.
I nearly said I'd follow, but then I realized we were standing in front of the courier's office. Meet me back here, I said. The office had sustained only a little damage, and was still operating. The mail chief recognized me from our first day, and produced two letters he'd been holding, one each for Cedric and me. Cedric's was from his associate Walter back in Cape Triumph. I tucked it into my pocket and tore into my envelope. It was from Mira.
Dear Adelaide, I know it hasn't been that long, but life without you feels so strange. I've had you by my side for the last year, and there's an emptiness now that you're gone. Having Tamsin back helps a lot. She won't talk much about Grashund, and seems troubled when it comes up. But aside from those moments, she's her same old self. She kept good on her promise to not accept any offers until Warren's return, but of course she still entertained plenty of gentlemen while he was gone. That's Tamsin, always keeping her options open. Since Warren came back, it seems as though her loyalty paid off. He was pretty smitten the last time I saw him, and excited to bring her back to show her around Hattison. And so it seems as if both of you are going off to great adventures while I stay here. Only a few of us aren't engaged yet, and I know I'll have to choose soon. None of my suitors have really inspired a burning passion within me, so it may come down to simply accepting the one, the only one, who offers me the most respect and freedom. Surely that's as good as love. I rather liked that lawyer you knew briefly, but he's made it pretty clear he's not interested in the glittering court right now. Write when you can. Mira. I reread the letter before folding it up.
I missed Mira as much as she missed me, and it saddened me that she might be forced into something simply because she had no better options. But I couldn't think too much about that, not with the perplexing information she presented about Tamsin. Warren had given no indication he'd settled on any girl, but Mira claimed he and Tamsin almost had a match, so much so that he wanted to bring her to Haddison. What was the truth? The letter was dated only a few days ago, and must have come with the mail on Warren's ship last night. I supposed anything could have happened. Had they quarrelled in so short a time? Had Tamsin decided she didn't want to live on the frontier after all? Cedric reappeared as I pondered all this. That excited, knowing look was on his face, which meant he had some brilliant plan in place. "Come on," he said, steering me back to where Lizzie was tied up. "Let's go back to the claim." I'd expected him to take me back to the Marshalls, since part of the day was gone, but I had no objections to this change. I was curious about how his place had fared in the storm. "What's going on?" I asked, once we were on the trail, heading away from the town. "Who is that man?"
"The man the Galvestons mentioned, the Alanzan magistrate."
"Did you talk to him about marrying your heathen fiancé?"
"Yes, actually."
Again, I could tell Cedric was bursting with eagerness. "And he's the one who's going to perform our wedding." "When the contract's taken care of?" I asked. "You're planning ahead."
"Not then. Now.
Tonight." Cedric hesitated.
"I mean, if you want to get married."
I craned my head back and tried to determine if he was serious. "How is that possible? We aren't allowed to..."
"Only in Warren's contract are we not allowed to. Legally, if a magistrate will do it, we can. Robert, that's his name, will do it and keep it secret."
"Okay." His enthusiasm was contagious, but I still didn't understand the entire plan. "If it's secret, what's the point? I mean, aside from the obvious joy of us being bound forever."
"The point is that if Silas Garrett's friend shows up and outs you, then Robert produces the documents that prove our marriage," Cedric explained. "It'll create a lot of hassle with Warren and his contract if we haven't settled those financial matters yet, but your grandmother won't have a claim on you anymore as a married woman."
"And that hassle with Warren is the reason we have to keep it secret in the meantime," I realized.
It's a backup plan."
"Exactly.
Assuming you're okay with an impromptu marriage.
Once this all works out, we can have another ceremony with our friends. If we find enough gold, Father might forgive us and let you wear one of your glittering court dresses."
"I don't even know if I remember how to lace one of those up," I said, laughing.
"I don't need it. I just need you."
He leaned forward and kissed my neck, his arms tightening around my waist.
"Careful," I said. "We're not married yet."
Back at the claim, things were about what I'd expected. The river had flooded, overturning the sluices. They were still intact, at least, and easy to set back up. The shanty had been completely flattened. Most of Cedric's belongings had been soaked, except for what was in his trunk. The rickety old stove had also survived. It seemed to be impervious. Everything else was put on hold as we worked to get the shanty put back together. I wasn't very good at that sort of thing. But as it turned out, neither was Cedric. Now I understood why it had taken him 3 days to get the shack in the shape it had been. By evening, we'd done as many repairs as we could with what we had. He'd have to replace the bed and a few other items, but at least he sort of had a roof again. I looked up at the darkened sky. "It's past when we usually go back. I hope the marshals don't come looking for me." "We'll tell them we got caught up in the repairs, and we have bigger things now. Look." Cedric pointed toward the trail that led to his property, and I saw Robert, the magistrate, riding toward us. He waved a hand in greeting. A tremor of nervousness ran through me. "I can't believe this is really going to happen." Cedric slipped an arm around me. "You can still change your mind. And you might want to. I'd hope to do an Alanzan rite, if that's okay. He could do a civil service if you wanted." I had only the briefest flash of that old fear, of dark rituals around a fire. Then those thoughts were banished. "The means don't matter. As long as I get to pledge myself to you, I'll be happy." It was a little surreal when Robert dismounted and donned a robe of black and white, so very different from the glittering vestments worn by the priests of Euros. Equally strange was the thought of an outdoor wedding.
It seemed so casual compared to the formal processions and long services performed in the great cathedrals of Euros. For the briefest of moments, I was taken away from this nighttime wilderness and remembered what it was like to sit between my parents in the pews of the King's Crest Cathedral, the wood hard and golden from years of use, enormous candelabras, rainbows of stained glass covering the walls. We'd gone to dozens of noble weddings in my childhood, and I'd see my mother scrutinizing every detail of each bride's attire, from her slippers to the enormous train trailing several feet behind her. And I could always tell my mother was mentally planning my wedding, deciding what would look best on me, velvet or silk for the gown, beadwork or embroidery on the train. That long-ago idea rose up in me that at any moment my parents were going to walk through the door. I found myself looking toward the trailhead, like they might suddenly appear there. But my parents weren't here. Neither was Grandmama. I wasn't even wearing a dress. Adelaide? Cedric drew my attention back to him. One eyebrow was raised in question. No doubt he was thinking I'd changed my mind. Looking at him, at that beloved face, eased the weight of the ghosts that had settled on me. They weren't gone. They never would be. But they were part of the past, and I couldn't change that. It was the future I looked to now. The future I had chosen. The future I saw in Cedric's eyes. We held hands as Robert recited the words of the Alanzan ceremony. It was sweet and beautiful, speaking of how the joining of two people was part of the natural order of things. It made our union seem greater than us, like we now shared a part of some powerful heavenly secret. Above us a full moon shone down, and I remembered Mira saying that was a fortuitous omen for Alanzan weddings. When Robert had finished reciting his words, it was time for us to recite ours. But first he placed a circlet of bishop's lace around our clasped hands. We tightened our hold as the frilly white flowers encircled our wrists. Then I learned the full wording of the vows Cedric had once mentioned. I will take your hand and lie with you in the groves, under the light of the moon. I will build a life with you upon this green earth. I will walk by your side for so long as the sun continues to rise. The ending kiss was the same as the ceremonies of Euros, and we savored it, clinging to each other as though afraid this would all slip away when we released each other. Also the same was the signing of various legal papers. It seemed odd to be doing something so bureaucratic in this wild setting, but it meant we were bound both in the eyes of the law and whatever gods were looking down upon us. With that realization, a new lightness suddenly filled me. I was free of anyone else's claim upon me, and Cedric and I were together. Truly together, as we'd been meant to be since that first day we met. He drew me to him once Robert had wished us well and gone his way, promising to keep the document safe. "How do you feel?" Cedric asked. "Happier than I ever imagined I'd be at my wedding," I said. "Happier than I ever imagined I'd be in my life. Also dirtier. But that doesn't bother me as much as I expected." He brushed his lips over mine. "Well, it's a good thing I know where there's a luxury bathhouse. Although it's probably going to be freezing." I grabbed his hand and immediately began leading him toward the shaded pond. "Then I'll keep you warm," I said. He was right. The water was a lot colder than that day we'd bathed in the heat of the afternoon, and it was a lot harder to see by moonlight. But neither of us looked away this time, and neither of us held back. We helped each other wash, but I don't know how good a job we really did. There was too much kissing, too much holding, too much everything. I felt no chill in the water, or when we left it and lay down on his coat in the grass. I felt nothing but heat, like we were both flames merging into something brighter and more powerful. And in what followed, I had that sense again that we were more than just us. We were part of the earth, part of the heavens. I understood why Alanziel and Dianziel had fallen from grace in order to be together. I would have defied Euros 1,000 times over to be with Cedric. Afterward, entwined with him on the grass, I didn't want to go. It didn't seem right to leave him on our wedding night. It didn't seem right to leave him ever. "Just a little longer," he said. A warm breeze danced over us, but I still shivered. He pulled me closer. "Just a little longer, and then things will be normal." I rested my head on his chest and laughed.
Things have never been normal between us. And I hope they never are.
And so with great reluctance on both our parts, we put our clothes back on. Poor Lizzie probably thought she'd had the night off, but doggedly took us down the trail. I sank into Cedric as we rode, dizzy and warm with this new connection between us. At the cabin we found Mistress Marshall waiting up for us. She sat at the table with a cup of tea, but couldn't fight a yawn as we entered.
There you are. Andrew wanted to come get you, but I told him you'd be along.
There was a lot of damage from the storm, I said. It wasn't an outright lie. I'm sorry I missed the lessons. She yawned again.
It's no concern. The children had plenty of clean-up work to do here. But your young man might as well stay over. No point in going back and turning right around in the morning. Just go upstairs and push the boys out of the way in the bed.
I will, said Cedric. Thank you. She headed toward her bedroom, and I asked, Is the water still hot? I'd like to make some chamomile. She gestured at the kettle on the smoldering hearth.
Help yourself.
Cedric and I walked upstairs together, and then lingered on the landing that separated the boys' and girls' rooms.
Well, how about that?
I whispered.
We get to spend our wedding night together after all.
Through a crack in the door to the boys' room, we could hear loud snoring.
Exactly as I imagined, Cedric said.
We kissed, as much as we dared, with me holding a hot cup of water and the knowledge anyone might stumble upon us. I went off to the girls' room, floating, heady with everything that had taken place this night. I changed out of my work clothes and slipped on a plain nightgown. Before getting under the covers with the other girls, I sat on the room's one stool and finished my tea. I hadn't added chamomile to it, however. Instead, I'd mixed in the cinnamon thorn leaves that Mistress Marshall had given me on our journey. Chapter 27. And so, unbeknownst to anyone else, a new pattern emerged for us in the next week. The entire world had changed for me. Each morning, Cedric would dutifully ride to the Marshall place and bring me back to help with the claim. We didn't get to work right away, though. We'd fall into the bed, or, well, the straw mattress that passed as one, and linger there as long as we dared. At least the straw was new, having been replaced after the storm. Getting up and starting our day took some effort, but the knowledge that we were that much closer to the life we wanted spurred us on. Equally hard was leaving him at the end of the day, but we did that too. I'd teach my lessons, sleep, and begin it all anew. "I got you something," Cedric told me one morning.
More than a gourmet meal?
That, too, was something else that had emerged. Cedric would always get out of bed first and make me breakfast. The old stove's options were limited, but he could pull off bacon and simple biscuits reasonably well. He'd serve it to me in bed, teasing that he had to wait on me because he knew that I secretly missed my old noble life and might leave him for it. Don't think I didn't notice that sarcasm. And yes, something more. I sat up cross-legged on the mattress. The only thing I'd bothered putting on so far was my plain white blouse, which was looking a lot less white than when I'd come to Haddison. Don't leave me in suspense. He came over and handed me my morning cup of cinnamon thorn tea, something else he'd taken upon himself to make, and a small metallic object. I looked closer and saw it was a necklace. A narrow linked chain held an oval-shaped pendant of thin glass with a flower pressed in the middle. I'd seen this pressed flower style before. They were trendy in Adoria right now. I held it up to the light and realized what the flower was.
It's bishop's lace, I said in delight,
just like the ones from our wedding.
It is one from our wedding. Since you can't wear a ring yet, I saved it so you'd have some kind of token.
That was resourceful of you.
I put the chain around my neck and ran my hands over the glass.
I forgot all about those flowers after,
well, everything else that happened that night. He touched my cheek.
Well, I can be pretty distracting. It's a wonder you can remember your name anymore.
Any of them.
Now, don't be so humble, I said, elbowing him.
But thank you. I hope you didn't spend too much on it.
Don't worry. It's brass. I'll do better on the ring.
He leaned down to kiss me. And then the sound of a horse outside made him jerk back. Without speaking, we both jumped up from the bed. Cedric tucked his shirt in while I hastily pulled on my split skirt and boots. I'd just seated myself at the tiny table with my tea when a knock sounded at the door. Cedric opened it casually,
putting on a pleasantly surprised smile when he saw Elias's sour face outside. "What an unexpected delight," Cedric lied. Elias peered inside.
"Hard at work, I see."
"You're just in time for breakfast," I gestured to the bacon before me. "Always a good start to the day. Would you like some?" Elias stepped inside, studying the shabby room with disdain. He leaned toward my food and sniffed, wrinkling his nose.
"Of course not. I'm here on business."
"Now, now, Elias. Don't be rude," said a familiar voice. Warren appeared in the doorway. "May I come in?"
"Certainly,"
Cedric said with a wave. "Welcome to my home." Warren's pleasant smile never left his face as he came in and looked around. I'd grown used to the shabbiness, but Warren no doubt thought I'd made a terrible choice.
"How quaint," was all he said.
Cedric had left the door open, and I could see Elias's usual henchmen out there, along with a few other unknown men milling about. "Is this for the load?" I asked. Throughout the week, Cedric and I had dutifully worked the pans and sluices, but had stayed away from the outcropping. Warren and Elias had urged us to wait until the proper men and tools were there, and we'd obeyed, despite our growing impatience. It had been hard, knowing that Cedric could have easily gone up there and, within a week of hacking, gotten what we needed for our immediate debts.
"What else would it be for?" Elias snapped. "Now if it isn't an inconvenience to your meal, we'd like to get started."
He turned for the door, and Cedric and I exchanged looks behind his back. What else could we do? We both wanted this, and if Elias's attitude was the price we had to pay, so be it. "I'm sorry," said Warren in a low voice, once Elias was back outside. "I know he's abrasive at times, but he's good at his job, and he's loyal." Outside, we found more climbing gear and several small crates. One of the men stepped forward, introducing himself as Argus Lane. He was an explosives expert, and showed us how the crates were filled with small containers.
"These work on a delay," he explained. "There are two components. On their own, they're perfectly stable. When mixed in great enough quantities with each other, they trigger an explosive reaction. Men'll go up there and set them, then hurry down before the reaction occurs."
"It sounds dangerous," I said. Argus smiled at me.
"Not if they're done correctly. Once the components are attached and we're ready, you just pull out a pin that triggers the top one to gradually fill into the bottom. It's designed to be slow enough for a getaway."
"Argus knows what he's doing," Warren said, patting the other man on the back. "He mined in Calardia before coming to Adoria, and he's already overseen the excavation of several loads here." Two of the men began strapping on harnesses and ropes, and Cedric offered to go with them.
"You stay on the ground," said Elias. "We need skilled climbers who can get out in time. You can help when we're ready to dig it out, and then you can fall at your leisure."
We'd mentioned Cedric's fall while at Warren's, and Elias had blamed it on Cedric's inexperience rather than faulty equipment. Anger flared up in me and I started to speak, but Cedric laid a calming hand on my arm. "We have bigger battles to fight," he murmured.
"Elias?"
said Warren in a warning voice. Elias eyed Cedric for several moments, seeming undecided about something. At last he said reluctantly,
"If you want to help, you can fasten the second load of explosive components together. Just fasten them, don't take the pins out. We don't need these going off."
The components were clearly marked, one blue and one red, and Argus demonstrated how to intricately twist the two cases so they clicked into place, one on top of the other. The pin that stopped them from mixing was fixed in tightly between them.
"Hard to get out, but still, be careful. Go slow."
"I'll help," I said, starting to kneel with Cedric in the grass.
"In Euros's name, no," groaned Elias. "I just said we don't need these going off. This is men's work, Miss Bailey, not sewing and mending."
I put my hands on my hips. "I'm aware, and I've been doing men's work for weeks now." "She's actually better at it than sewing and mending," remarked Cedric, deadpan. Elias turned to Warren beseechingly.
"Sir, I beg you."
"Elias, she is a very capable woman, and you'd do well to recognize that," said Warren sternly. He turned to me. "But in fairness, I know when too many hands are involved in that kind of detailed work, it actually can get more complicated. Would you mind terribly if instead I took you up on your earlier hospitality? I thought I smelled tea back there, and now I can't stop thinking about it."
Elias's smug smile nearly drove me to refuse. I'd served them willingly last time, but now this felt like proof that I could do only women's work. But I kept the polite facade and went back to the shanty, grateful that on this trip at least I didn't have to hide Alan's and artifacts. I'd used up the last of my cinnamon thorn tea this morning, and would have to endure the humiliation of asking Mistress Marshall for more. Not that I would have ever served that to Warren, anyway. I instead used some decent black that Cedric had splurged on during a recent trip to town. By the time it was steeped and ready to go, I found all sorts of progress outside. Warren's men were almost at the top of the outcropping. Cedric was just about finished with his task when Elias unceremoniously set down an enormous pile of rope, as well as a couple more explosives with the components already joined.
"Since you're so eager to help," said Elias, "this needs untangling."
His tone was as demeaning as ever. I was about to hurry over to help Cedric, but Warren beckoned me over, excitement on his face. He pointed up. "We could mine what's at the top with picks, but the bottom would be too inaccessible because of the column's narrowness. Once they've assessed what's there, they'll blow off the outer rock on top and then mine what's exposed. They'll keep blowing it off section by section, working their way down until we get everything out. And then..." Warren gestured to the foothills beyond. "Then we go after that." "Where you'll get a lot more than a 40% commission," I said with a smile.
"Hey, boss!"
called one of the men on top. He'd been looking at the crevasse.
"This place is stacked! I can tell just from where he picked at it the other day."
This elicited a few cheers from the men on the ground. Warren looked equally excited, but managed to keep his voice dignified.
"Well, that is what we're here for. Proceed."
The men on top set to work, placing the combined explosive components. Warren took my arm and began steering me backward. The charges are designed to be strong enough to break through the rock, but not so powerful they bring that whole structure down. Nonetheless, it's best if we keep our distance, in case there's any falling debris. Other men on the ground were doing the same, and I cast an anxious look over at Cedric. He was on the opposite side of the outcropping from me, but farther back than we were. When the explosives were set, the men pulled the pins out and then began quickly rappelling back down. Part of me expected something dramatic, like the explosives going off just as the men made it to the ground. But the mixing of the components had been timed to give a high margin of safety, and the men were back in the safe zone when the top of the outcropping exploded spectacularly. Even knowing what to expect, I couldn't help a small cry of surprise. Thunder boomed around us, and the ground shook as a flash of fire lit up the crevasse. Warren pulled me to him and put his arm out protectively, but there was no need. We were indeed outside the most dangerous radius, and the rocks and debris that rained down stayed relatively close to the cliff itself. As the smoke blew away, I could see glittering spots on the ground, among the rocky debris.
"There's gold there," I said.
Warren smiled.
"From the outer layers of the deposit. We can just walk over and pick that up later, when the main part of the excavation is wrapped up. A lot easier than panning, huh?"
I started to answer and then caught sight of something in my periphery. I turned and saw a figure on horseback approaching from the side of the claim opposite the one that led to town.
"Cedric," I called. "There's someone there."
Cedric rose and put a hand to his eyes to block the sun. A big grin broke out over his face.
"Hey, Sully!"
Cedric strode away from his task and waved to the approaching figure, who answered with his own wave. A few things happened almost at once then. I saw Elias shoot Warren a questioning look. Eager to meet Cedric's infamous neighbor, I left Warren's side and hurried after Cedric, going very near where he'd been working on the rope. Elias ran up and grabbed me from behind, literally throwing me back toward Warren, so that I hit the ground hard and bit my tongue.
"Hey,"
I said, struggling to my feet.
"What's the..."
The world was suddenly ripped apart. The prior explosion in the crevasse had been loud, but nothing compared to this deafening roar. One successive boom followed after another. I covered my ears, but it did little to dampen the sound. The shaking of the ground caused me to fall over again. Plumes of flame rolled up into the air from the equipment pile, soon leaving black smoke in their wake. A hand on my arm tugged me up, and I found Warren looking down at me solicitously. At first my ears rang too much to make sense of what he said. Then I finally heard,
"Are you okay?"
I gave a shaky nod and looked around. All of his men were grouped not far from us, over by the outcropping, and well away from the pile of explosives that had just gone off. Being on open ground like that, the blast had thrown up little debris short of dirt. My real panic, of course, came at seeing Cedric. He stood up on wobbly legs,
having also been knocked over by a shockwave and moved about unsteadily. I started to head toward him, but my own balance was still off.
"Easy there," said Warren, holding me again so I wouldn't fall.
I started to protest, but then Sully rode up to Cedric and dismounted. The older man said something, and Cedric nodded. As I watched, his steps grew surer, and his balance returned.
"Get some water on that!" shouted Elias.
Most of the fire from the explosions was already out. A little of the surrounding grass still smoldered, but all that remained of the initial blast was a shallow crater. Warren's men all had canteens and used them to put out the residual flames. This just created more smoke, and for a few minutes we all coughed and wiped tears out of our eyes.
"Having a little trouble with your charges?"
asked Sully conversationally. He was a stereotypical prospector, long and lanky, with shaggy grey hair and an unkempt beard. Elias turned on Cedric angrily.
"This is what comes of letting you near those! You never should have been let near any of this! A coddled city boy has no business out here around real work. Deadly work for those two stupid to know what they're doing."
Cedric took an angry step forward, fists clenched at his sides.
"I did know what I was doing. I handled every one of those components perfectly. And then I checked them over twice. No pins were out. Something in the explosives was faulty. Just like that harness you brought me." "Don't blame your continued incompetence on me," exclaimed Elias.
"And don't act like I can't see this sabotage," returned Cedric. "There was nothing wrong with the canisters I assembled." I was rubbing my head, still recovering from the blast. Slowly, memories surfaced to the front of my mind.
"But you didn't assemble them all," I said.
Everyone turned to me, and I pointed at Elias.
"When you brought the rope, you added more explosives to Cedric's pile." "Leftovers that weren't needed in the first wave," said Elias. "Safer to keep them in one place rather than..."
"Leftovers that Cedric didn't put together," I interrupted. "I don't fully understand their mechanics, but they must have been tampered with from the inside to do a slow mix and eventually combust." Warren placed a gentle hand on my arm.
"Adelaide, you need to rest. That blast was harder on you than you realize."
I pulled away from him.
"Elias knew. It's why he pushed me away when I started to get close to the explosives. He steered everyone away. He knew they were going to go off. If Sully hadn't arrived, Cedric would have been right there."
I choked for a moment, unable to comprehend such a terrible outcome. Then a new realization hit me as I met Warren's eyes.
"And you knew, too.
Elias turned to you when Cedric left, and you made sure to keep me away, too. You were in on it."
Cedric moved forward, putting himself between Warren and me.
"What's your endgame been?
Why did you bring us out here?
Has this really all been some sort of elaborate revenge scheme?"
Several heated moments hung in the air as we all sized each other up. Then Warren gave a simple nod, and two men lunged forward and tackled Cedric to the ground.
I screamed and moved forward, but Elias grabbed hold of me. Sully also started to come to the rescue, but Cedric managed to lift his head through his assault and cry out, "Go! Get help!"
Sully hesitated for only the blink of an eye before hopping back on his horse. For a man his age, he moved remarkably fast. It didn't hurt that his horse could have run circles around Lizzie. Within seconds, Sully was tearing off across the claim.
"Go after him!" Warren shouted at one of the men.
Their horses were farther away, tethered near the shanty, giving Sully a respectable lead. Neither Cedric nor I were yielding easily to our captors. We were restrained in different ways, however. When Cedric resisted, he was met with brutal punches and hits. I saw him gasp as a foot slammed into his ribs, and later a punch to the face made him spit blood. I fought frantically against Elias, desperate to help Cedric, but he shoved me down onto my knees and used his greater weight to keep me in place.
"Be still, you hellion!" to Warren he asked. "What now?"
Warren looked weary more than anything else. "Take her to that hovel and tie her up for now." As for him, his eye fell coldly on Cedric. "Over to the river, by one of the sluices. That's where he'd most likely be working if raiders came. Then clean out the other sluices and do a little work on the outcropping. Enough to look like some hasty, haphazard job. We'll truss up the house later. Not that anyone could tell the difference. The rest of you come with me, and see if we can catch up with that old fool." As he started to walk away, Warren paused and added to Elias, "Don't quite kill him." I'll take care of that when I'm back. But make sure he doesn't get up in the meantime. The group dispersed, and I realized they were going to make this look like the work of bandits who'd swooped in to kill whoever they found and seize whatever gold was easily accessible.
Cedric!